On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
The front page of the Irish Mail on Sunday tells us that staff at a Limerick charity were told to misrepresent themselves, that's the Mail's words, misrepresent themselves as frontline healthcare workers in order to be vaccinated against COVID-19. Almost 70 employees at the Northside Family Resource Centre were vaccinated in this fashion, including cleaners, kitchen workers and administration staff who was working from home. Let me bring in my first guest this morning, the Chief Executive of the HSE, Paul Reid. Paul, thanks very much for joining us and good morning and happy Easter to you. Let's just talk about that Mail on Sunday story first of all. Workers being told, in the paper's words, to misrepresent themselves as frontline workers. Can you tell us much about this or what you might know about it?
Morning, Gavin, and happy Easter to you and all your listeners. I guess just standing back from that case, with reference to that case, I mean, the whole programme of vaccinations in this country, and indeed any country, is based on a high level of trust. It's certainly geared towards, in the first instance, protecting those who are most vulnerable or most liable to, at risk of hospitalisation, disease, severe disease, indeed ICU or mortality. And I have to say, for the vast, vast majority of the very close to 1 million vaccines that we'll have completed by this week, that level of trust remains very strong, and the vast majority of the public are waiting their turn for the vaccine to come to them. So it is very frustrating, it's annoying, and it breaches the basic tenet of what a programme is all about when incidents like that happen, or other incidents that we know have been quite high profile as well have happened.
So is the story on the Mail on Sunday, is it fundamentally true in that point that people were told, in their words, to misrepresent their status in order to get into the queue earlier?
Well, in fairness, I don't have all the details of it, but what I do know is a lot of other organisation would carry out would be what we have seen in the list of, some of it would be what we were seeing in terms of the list coming forward, legitimately coming forward, because when we're talking about vaccinating frontline healthcare workers or people in that category, just to make the point, first of all, you know, It's been said in the last few days, the numbers that are now on that. First of all, it does include not just HSE people, it's obviously public, private healthcare workers. It's not just hospital staff. It is about people who are providing health services to the public that we want to keep going. So physios, pharmacies, many people who are involved in providing services that we want to keep going. Now, I don't know the full details of the organisation, but I do know they provide some of those services as well. So our primary aim at the early start of this cohort, frontline healthcare workers, and if you look at it from a HSE perspective, in January and February, the transmission levels of COVID across our health settings were high risk, and we had hospitals with massive outbreaks. And they took the right decision then to vaccinate a lot of people who would be coming in and working in the hospitals, may not always be in direct frontline, but they had to take the right decisions to protect the hospital settings. And the good news is, it's actually worked.
So basically, you had to vaccinate some people who weren't necessarily patient-facing because the system would be flying on one wing if they were to be out of action, for example.
Well, exactly. You have to look at the wider risk, and the wider risk to society, the wider risk to the public, the wider risk to our patients. Hospitals did take decisions to vaccinate some other people, and I stand over that element of it because it worked. What I don't stand over is where it's just completely wrong for somebody who's not at risk or not exposed to healthcare settings, that they would be vaccinated. And there have been some of those instances.
Well, there was obviously reporting to that effect during the week about the abuse of the internal portal through which HSE workers could register. Do you know at this point, I know that the figures were sketchy earlier in the week, do you know at this stage how many unauthorised bookings that might have been made through, for example, the abuse of that portal?
Yeah, but again, just to take that issue of the abuse of the portal, it's not a failing of the portal or the registration of the portal, it is abuse of your trust, where somebody sends on, the access identification into the portal and someone fills it in, or sorry, puts their details in the portal. Certainly what we've had to do is strengthen the validation process to make sure when the person is coming to be receive their vaccine that they're well validated, that they are who they are in the category of people that we are vaccinating on that day, and they are legitimate to be vaccinated. So that's how we try.
So it's possible that some people could register, for example, through that portal, but then when it comes to identification on the day, that they could be declined because they don't fit into the queue?
Absolutely, yeah, and that's the whole purpose of the validation process. And just to reassure your listeners, as we go public and into the more age groups and we start to reach out to the wider population, it is a different process for the portal. It's where the public will be registering a lot of their biographical details, age, date of birth, and the PPS number. And they'll be validating some of that. And then when we come to, when the person comes to, we will be seeking ID. So it's a, and they, sorry, they will, certainly we will have a scheduler. So they'll be assigned to go to a certain place at a certain time and to validate. So it's a completely different process as we reach out to the public. So certainly in the first instance, we're relying on a high level of trust, particularly for healthcare workers that we've been working through on that. And I will stand back from it again, Gavin, I know we spent a few minutes on this. It has worked. We have significant and huge benefits from the vaccines that have been completed, with almost 1 million people this week, reduced sickness, reduced mortality, reduced illness, reduced hospitalizations, reduced transmission levels in our most vulnerable nursing homes all across the country to the lowest level ever, reduced outbreaks in hospitals, reduced numbers of healthcare workers out through COVID.
No, sure.
So just to reassure you.
Like, nobody would dispute the positives of it, and it's obviously great to be reaching the threshold of 1 million people, because you'd rather, or a million vaccines rather, because people would rather there be 1 million done than none done at all. But I suppose there's always the risk that some of these marginal instances of fraud around the edges, or of people misrepresenting themselves to try and get higher up in the queue, will undermine some public confidence. And people will wonder then, is there any kind of process for disciplinary procedures for those who might have tried to skip the queue in that way?
No, and I don't try to be defensive about it where those breaches have happened. They are serious and treated as serious. But I am making the point it's equally important that we reassure the public in the same context of those breaches that happen, the huge benefits that we are seeing from the programme. That's the only reason I make that point. But ultimately, look, there's been a number of instances. Some have gone through assessments, some have gone through very public reports. Some have had reports concluded on them. Some of them are for private organisations to assess and make their own judgments. And we certainly do that throughout the agency as well.
Does the private organisations, that include the likes of the Beacon, for example?
Yeah, well, I think in the likes of the Beacon, from our own perspective, I think there's two processes emerging from the Beacon. One is one which their own board have commenced, and one is which we, the HSE, have also commenced, which is a review. An assessment. I've just concluded this week the terms of reference for that review. I've just concluded the appointment of a very senior and experienced an investigator who will do the
Eugene
report
McKay.
Under. No, sorry, that's incorrect. Yeah. Eugene is leading the one for the Beacon themselves, but we separately have appointed somebody who has experienced this to carry out our own separate review.
As we know,
we let the process go.
The issues that arose at the Beacon partly arose, according to their own explanation, because there were some double bookings, for example, where people were simultaneously scheduled to receive their first or second jabs at both the Aviva and the Beacon. They were offered two appointments on the same day, and that's why they were left with a surplus towards the end of the day. Just on a practical level, how exactly does that arise? How does it end up happening that people are offered two appointments for the same job on the same day?
Yeah, just before I specifically answer that question, I would just clarify, I'm not convinced the issues that did arise, and let's see how the report goes in relation to Beacon, were a consequence of double booking. I think that's a separate issue altogether.
Okay. Specifically, do you have any other reason then to suspect that something else had arisen there? Can you give us more insight on that?
No, I'm just making the point in terms of people receiving a vaccine out of complete sequence of the thing. You know, I don't think that can be specifically related to a double booking issue. But look,
okay, yeah, point taken. Okay, but how does it arise then that people can end up getting two appointments for the same day?
Yeah, and I'm pleased to answer this. With the stage that we're at with the portal for this level of population that we're doing, which is primarily healthcare workers and also medically vulnerable, it doesn't have the functionality which I've just described to you. We will have as we go public, so it does require the vaccination centres to draw on those that are registered on the portal. And in some instances, people have been drawing on the same list and have made some manual appointments for people, which caused duplicate bookings. Again, we've put in some stronger processes around that. So if two centres are drawing off the same list, just strengthened processes of who calls, you know, what grouping within who's registered on the portal. So we've had to strengthen the process around that. It's unfortunate, I apologise, that did happen for some people with double bookings.
What about cases, as we've heard a few instances of in the last couple of days, particularly around City West, where people are saying that they're only receiving their text messages to announce their appointments after the appointment has already been and gone?
I think that was incidents related to Talley University Hospital, if I'm not mistaken. There were a small number of instances of that. And again, they have identified an issue in terms of their own side and process on the system. Look, these are instances we've had to address. And these are instances where it's regrettable that they happen. They are marginal on the scale of the whole lot. And I know I'm making that point a few times this morning, but it is the reason I'm making it is just to reassure the public as these issues emerge, we identify them, we address them. Of the total, you know, vaccinations we've completed, they are on the margins. They're regrettable. They happen. We address them. We put our hands up where they shouldn't have happened. We fix them, and we move on. And we'll continue to do that. And there's been learnings at every cohort we're doing so far in this process, whether it's, you know, how many are in the nursing homes and long-term care facilities, how many are in frontline healthcare workers, you know, and how you define that. And then how many as you move in towards the over 70s, and how do you get to people who are homebound, you know, housebound. Now we're moving into more medically vulnerable. So there's nothing absolutely simple about each cohort that we're working through. Where it does get simpler, I think, as we now move towards age later on in April, when we start the 65 to 69s, and we move to the rest of priorities.
Are you and the HSE broadly in favour then of the recategorisation announced during the week, where people wouldn't be prioritised based on their profession, but rather solely on their age?
Yeah, well, I think if you stand back from the recommendation from NIAC, which government have obviously adopted as policy, first of all, it's important to remind ourselves, what is a vaccination programme about? It's about reducing hospitalisations, severe, severe disease, and ICU mortality. That's what it's about. Now, when they do their assessment based on a medical assessment, the very clear evidence, and even more so now since the evidence on the vaccines is coming through, very clear evidence is the highest risk is not based on transmission. The highest risk is based on, you know, the impacts of hospitalizations, and a way to address the impacts of hospitalizations, very clear evidence, is based on age. And it's not just the evidence that you would have to look at in terms of what the NIAC and the medical assessment has done. If you walk into any of our, if you spoke to any of our doctors, nurses, consultants, GPs, people working in nursing homes, and you ask them today, what do they believe would be the prioritised approach? They will very clearly say to you, not based on where you work or what your role is, with the exception of healthcare workers who are exposed to high risk, bringing it into those healthcare settings. They will say to you it's based on age. So I think it's very strong in evidence.
But there is, I mean, that is true. And obviously, if you look at the level of admissions to hospitals and to ICUs, of course, it is largely based on age. But others would say that it doesn't make a huge amount of sense to vaccinate somebody who is capable and happily working at home, who doesn't have much risk of exposure to the virus at all, over a young teacher or a young Garda who's in their 20s or 30s and whose daily lives and daily professions, which are also hugely important to society, also then bring them into risk of interacting with the virus in the first place. And much as you made the argument, and it's a very fair argument about how the health service can't operate on one wing if you have non-patient-facing staff who are missing as a result of the virus, the same is true for Gardaí and teachers and a lot of other sectors.
If you stick with the evidence, Gavin, and you know this is what the evidence has been well produced, I mean, the comparisons which NIAC have done, you know, if you're in the age group of 20 to 35, if you're doing a comparison of that age group versus somebody in 60 to 64 age group, 5 times more likely to be hospitalised if you're in the 60 to 64 age group, 20 times more likely to go into an ICU, and 70 times more likely in terms of mortality. So there are very clear evidence-based analysis. And what the vaccination programme is showing and demonstrating is when you address the vulnerable and the medically vulnerable first, which we've done, the next set of prioritisations of people will be based on age. And that's like we've adapted our programme from the HSE from many perspectives and recommendations from NIAC, and we'll continue to do so. And we'll do it now based on this one. So it's purely based on the medical evidence,
okay,
and indeed the evidence that's emerging from the vaccination programme.
We could talk at length about that, but there's a couple of other issues that I wanted to get to before I let you go. There's over 619,000 people now who have received their first jab by the end of March. That's the most vulnerable, the most exposed. It's 1/6 of the population. Why in that line, and I can already see a lot of feedback about this online this morning, if so many of the most vulnerable society have now been vaccinated, at least with one jab, why should we still be concerned about a possible fourth wave and the impact that it would have on your hospitals?
Yeah, I'm glad you raised that point, Gavin, because it's an important weekend, again, for me to stress it. We are still very concerned about transmission levels. I mean, one thing is we have certainly got to some of the most vulnerable. We are still a long way to go to the medically vulnerable and at age, some of the discussion we had just on age, so still a long way, and a very long way to go before we get to that level of what's called herd immunity. So right now, transmission levels in the community are still very strong. They're still high risk for us. And the risk for us in terms of fourth wave is, if this was to turn again, and we're hovering around the 500, 600 figures, 600, indeed 700 figures in terms of cases each day, if that was to turn now, which what we saw last year, with the level and with the variant that we deal with now, the exponential growth that that could have and the impact that could have on us, we are now today 240 people in hospital, 61 people in ICU. That's a very, very high base of which, if these transmission levels in the community were to turn again on us, you know, because if you're to go on multiples on that, on top of 240 people, that would put our hospitals at extreme risk and put safety as a real concern.
Are you basically saying, I don't want to try and put words in your mouth, but are you basically saying that even if there wasn't any hospital admissions for those who are vulnerable or over 70, for example, that another wave, even with those under 70 or under 60, could still be enough to overwhelm the system?
Oh, the reality of it is the transmission levels in the community are ultimately what affect our hospital levels, because there's a lag period between transmission levels in the community, between the time people get sick, between the time people are hospitalised, and indeed in our ICU, you know, and I think you had Catherine Motorway on.
Yes, she was on News Talk Breakfast this morning, yeah.
Yeah, so Catherine Motorway, one of our lead ICU consultants, is making the point in terms of people who come into ICU, it's not necessarily or primarily at all the over 70s, because, you know, certainly the vaccination programme has helped those, but it is people below the age of 70 who are prone, and, you know, where ICU would be more appropriate for them in their care. So, you know, we haven't addressed enough significant levels of the population for us to relax under any stage what's happening in the community. And I think, in fairness to the public, I know we've many highlighted cases over the weekend, but I think in fairness to the public over the Easter weekend and through April, if we get this window of opportunity and embrace it, we have a real chance. If you just take even April alone, we could be vaccinating the same amount of people in April that we would have done based on supply in the first 3 months of this year. So we're really at a different level of the vaccination programme.
And that includes about 125,000 doses next week, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, ultimately we'll have done over 120,000 this week. On Good Friday alone, just a couple of days ago, we did our highest day ever, over 30,000 done on Good Friday. You know, probably over 930,000 vaccines administered by the end of this weekend. Over 660,000 people with dose ones, which is about 17%, over 17% of the eligible population. So we're at a really important point. All the most vulnerable, I spent all day yesterday in the Helix Centre, 6,500 over 70s being vaccinated, 70 to 75, 79 dose ones, and 80 to 84 dose twos. You know, we're just really at a really good point in the vaccination programme. So I think, for an Easter weekend, for all your listeners, I really think they should take great assurance. We're at a really important point in the programme, and it gives us a really good hope looking forward if we can really embrace this period in April to give us a chance to get that out.
Okay. One final point just before I let you go. At some point, the country is going to reopen. The restrictions are going to be lifted eventually. COVID will still be around and the R number is going to get higher. It's going to become a virus which is in high transmission, but hopefully because you'll have had herd immunity, there'll be far lower health effects. Is that a world that the HSE is basically ready to live with, that COVID is just in permanent circulation and will always produce a small amount of demand on hospitals anyway?
Yeah, and I think it gets back to the core and the primary objective of what a vaccination programme is. And thanks to world science that's happened and how quick we have this, vaccination programme is to exactly do that, reduce hospitalisations, reduce severe sickness levels, reduce ICUs, reduce mortalities. And the good news is, from the vulnerable groups that we've vaccinated so far, it's working. So it gives us all a good hope to say, you know, how do we cope with the virus in a very different way? How do we live with it?
Because we've seen how the system can sometimes struggle with a winter flu, and if this is going to be another style of winter flu, the sort of virus which is always in permanent circulation that you can't ever completely knock out, is that something the HSE can live with?
Well, I think the reality for the HSE in terms of our health system overall, it has to cope with many competing factors that happen, whether it's winter, whether it's the majority of the non-COVID service that we want to get back to. So the vaccination programme gives us a lens, an opportunity now to start restoring levels of services that we want to do. Again, we're concerned with the levels that's in the community, but we want to get back to a lot of our non-COVID services and scale those up. And the vaccination programme is the route that helps us do that too.
Okay, Paul Reid, Chief Executive of the HSE, thank you very much for joining us this morning, and enjoy the rest of your Easter weekend. Very much appreciate your time this morning.